Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy. Kate Schreck, hello.
Hello there, Kathy Love. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm really good, thanks. Thanks for the opportunity to come and have another chat with you.
Oh, I know. Love a chat. Kate Schreck is the founding director of Lightbulb Training Solutions. And as she told me before we hit record, the founder of a few other newer initiatives, yes, including just the schools and some other good things that we'll talk about.
Yeah, it's all very exciting. So I'm happy to share with your wonderful audience.
Oh, look, where could we start? We've just got to keep this G-rated, Kate. Where could we start? Let's start with Lightbulb Training Solutions. And every time I say that, I've never told you this, every time I say that, I hear the little light, the little click that a light switch makes. And I know you built that into your marketing and website for a while there. Tell us about Lightbulb Training Solutions.
So Lightbulb Training Solutions has been going now for coming up to 13 years, which we're very proud of. It very much started as Kate at the kitchen table, which I know a lot of your people listening.
I was the dining table with the milk crate.
Yeah, well, to be truthful, my husband and I were outside on the patio with a beer each and just sort of going, geez, I reckon we could do this workplace training stuff better than the businesses we've been working for. So in all arrogance, we said, let's give it a go. So Lightbulb Training Solutions was born, and it is soft skill training with a focus on service excellence. So soft skill is obviously all about our people skills. So we go into workplaces and design and deliver. On-site is our preference, but, of course, because of COVID, we've sharpened our online skills as well. But, you know, we talk about teamwork, customer service, what it is, the importance of standards, dealing with co-worker conflict, dealing with difficult clients, all the people side of things in a workplace that we know can make or break a business, and not just their bottom line. It can break their spirit, you know, break their passion, all that stuff. So that's Lightbulb Training Solutions, and that's myself and about six or seven now trainers and facilitators who come under this banner, and we reach out. We say, how can we help?
Do customer crazy together.
Yeah, love customers, love customer service, always have, always found that that's where I generate towards in any business I've worked in. I want to help the people who come into the business.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my passion.
Oh, love it, love it, love it. Who are your customers?
So Lightbulb Training Solutions works across all businesses. So we don't specialise in an industry, although we have had a lot of engagement with allied health.
You have? I heard about another one just yesterday, some training you did last year.
Yeah, we've really hit the mark there. And because of that, we've generated more training in the area of, you know, leadership and things like that. But mainly it's all about that kind of understanding of human behaviour at work. So we focus very strongly on emotional intelligence. So there's a lot of stuff that we look at, but we don't specialize in. We just work with that industry. It would make sense, probably. I always thought early on in the business, oh gosh, Kate, you're spreading yourself thin. But what I realized was I was passionate about a topic, not so much a workplace, and the topic is really frontline customer service, and it speaks to all industries. And it's not something that needs to be adjusted based on your industry. We reflect on your standards, we reflect on what you do, but people in the workplace are people in the workplace, so we like to help people in the workplace, yeah. We probably sit very much in the medium to large space in the sense of what we do the bulk of our work, but our medium for us is, you know, 20 or more staff. Yeah. And in some terms, I know, you know, some people think that's small, but I think that's medium, 20 to 100.
Yeah.
But we do some small team stuff as well. So yeah, that's what we do.
Oh, thinking back to some of the work you've done with allied health businesses, what have you what have you noticed about those teams?
Most recently, it's the aftershock of COVID has become quite a, you know, and when we're not through it and never going to be through it, so to speak, and but the landscape has changed. And a lot of the allied health businesses are reaching out for a real, Kate, we need to reunite the team. Like this, and not even just because they've been working from home. A few people kind of resisted coming back to the office, but mainly it's just that disconnect. Like 3 years of not actually having much face time, or all the changes that just constantly happen. Everyone just feels like they need a chance to get in a room and reflect and review and reset the, you know, the goalpost kind of thing. So that's been the call out. We've had a lot of call out. Kate, can you come and do a 3-hour team session? Kate, can you come and do a full day refresher? Kate, can you help us work with our values? We've done probably 5 or 6 value pieces with some allied health as well, just helping them reflect on where they want to be in the future. Yeah.
There seems to have been a really strong assumption that in 2022 everyone would recover and just pick their socks up and get a bit of lip gloss and find their best shoes and schlep back into work as though nothing had happened. And I was talking with the CEO of a large HR company last week, and he likened it to PTSD and that people were still processing, I know I certainly was, across the middle and even the second half of last year.
Yeah.
In terms of what was that and what have we learned? And
all of those conversations are really important as well. Whereas if we rush in and kind of think, oh, like, you know, business as usual, at some point, you know, the kettle's gonna, you know, explode, isn't it? Because you're holding in all this tension and you're holding in all these what do I want to be kind of questions and where do I want to do it? People are having those really deep thoughts now. Where we come at it from a front line, and the front line being the people that have direct impact with your customers, face-to-face, telephone or written. From the front line perspective, it's about understanding that how you turn up at work, what you're thinking will impact how you behave, and how you impact in that sense can, you know, make or break the business reputation. So, and when we've all been to a business where you've walked in and kind of gone, gee, I don't think that person likes their job. Like, it's so evident, isn't it? You know, it's kind of like, oh, gosh. And often we find that person hasn't got a clue that they're projecting that kind of image. They're just really deep in their own thoughts and they're really busy and they've got to do things. So, yeah, the COVID hangover, the COVID aftershock, it's hanging around. And it has positives and negatives. I think it has positives and negatives.
I haven't heard it called the COVID hangover.
Well, that's probably something
I've written that down.
Made up.
That's all right. We'll take that. I think it's exactly what it is. It's just that sort of dusty, fatigued kind of feel.
Yeah, you know, you never want to feel like it again, but you kind of think that, you know, you have to just do some adjustments. If something has to shift, doesn't it? I'll move from the vodka. I'll go down a shelf.
Yeah, or get more space before between the hangovers.
Yeah, exactly. But on the flip side of that, there's a lot of people with really positive energy about it too. And it's really exciting. Like, most of the businesses, I would say 85% of the businesses, not just allied health, that have reached out in the last 6 to 12 months are actually excited.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh, look at the opportunity now. We've got some excellent technology now that we never thought we'd use. But it's change, and so we do a lot of work in the space of change management and getting the staff on board and all of that sort of stuff as well. So it's still our passion piece is still helping the front line, but all the topics now are not just for the leaders. Like, often the leaders get that, you know, how do I manage the change and all that. We're coming in going, well, how about we get your team to be able to be self-managers? And then that makes it easier on the leaders as well. So, yeah.
Why did you choose the title frontline? For me, it's very military-esque.
Yeah.
And I know you don't really think like that.
No. It is. I mean, it's born from the military. But in the sense of a business, it's the people that have the first and most impact for the backline. So the backline of the business, we tend to think more of those that do the work are doing the tasks, you know, maybe they're in the finance side of it, maybe they're in the marketing side of it, and they're creating content or they're doing things, but they're not actually talking to a person or communicating with a person. Mm-hmm. So we call them on the front line. They're the first out, and they're the ones that make the biggest impact. That's what I truly believe. Mm-hmm. They make the biggest impact. So we're not sending you into war, although some days it can feel like that when you're on the front line. The whole idea for the front line is often it's a surprise. You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Like the clients walk in and you don't know what's coming, and it could be friendly fire. It could be just, you know, a box of chocolates to say thanks so much, but you have to be on guard with your positive professional approach every single day. And that's armor. I mean, that really is armor. It doesn't have to be because you're shielding yourself from something. It can be because you want to welcome people in and go, this is how we arm our business to have a great reputation. So, yeah, frontline. I know in COVID, again, it got that reward. Well, the frontline was our health.
Oh, family. Yeah.
Yeah, so it keeps moving. But good question. A lot of people don't kind of clearly understand what that is. Mm. If we flip it to allied health, yeah, absolutely. It's whoever's at the front desk. That makes sense. Mm. But it's just as much a part of the role of an OT who might be, you know, in the front line with that client in that moment or picking up the phone. It's when you're having direct front-facing contact, email, phone, and obviously face-to-face.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. They've got to be all-rounders, don't they? What do you see as the key success factors for really a happy, effective frontliner?
Two things. So it's the EQ versus IQ conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you do need a set of what we call the hard skills or the IQ stuff. You need to be able to work the databases. You need to be able to understand the security system. You need to know what to do if there's a buyer. You need to know how to use the phone system. You need to know how to do your analysis, all of the hard skills. But none of that is going to have an impact like your soft skills, which is the emotional intelligence. So you want people who are self-aware. I mean, you want people who are having a bad day at home, no milk in the fridge, you know, raining all the way to work, forgot to give the kids money for lunch. All of those thoughts are left at the door when you walk into work or are categorized, prioritized in a way that doesn't impact how you come across to the team. So it's a little bit of, you know, you impact everyone you're with in every moment in a workplace, and that's a lot of work for our introverts. It's less work for our extroverts. So understanding your energy levels, all of that stuff, which all comes under the banner of self-awareness, doesn't it? You know, it's how self-aware am I? I'm in a professional environment. Sometimes I have to act how I don't feel. Am I okay with that? What strategies have I got in place? With the sole goal being whatever the value or the mission or the vision statement is of your business. So if you haven't got that in line, then everybody's just coming to work using common sense and
hoping for the best.
Yeah. And everyone has a bad day, but what strategies have you got in place to overcome that emotion on that moment? And or is there strategies in place or support to help your staff when their external life is actually quite, honestly, a little bit too difficult to manage at work, which I know your space has a lot of understanding of that.
Yeah.
You know, the mental health.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The EQ versus IQ is a topic that I think we need to kind of talk about a little bit more. It's easy at a surface level.
Yeah.
But how do you describe EQ to people who perhaps are less familiar with it?
Yeah. So if I'm talking to the team, and generally we talk about it in a sense of, I love Maya Angelou's, I love Maya Angelou, but her comment that people remember how you made them feel more than what you did for them, to me is just the most perfect way to understand. The EQ is about feelings. So how people make you feel versus what you did for them. So, you know, if you, you know, signed up a new client, that is what we call the IQ side of it. There's the form, there's the information, there's the fees, there's the prices, there's the press this button, put that in. But if during that process you've got high EQ, your client walks out feeling safe, feeling like they can trust you, and it's got nothing to do with the form. So when we talk about EQ and IQ, that's the difference. And that's 80% is the statistic that gets thrown around, but is that, you know, 80% of not only job satisfaction, but whether staff actually want to stay with your business is based on the EQ of your team. So if you've got EQ as one of your values and you go, we want to have a highly highly developed emotional intelligence in our workplace, then you know that 80% of job satisfaction comes from it. You know that retention comes from that. You know you can attract high caliber staff from that if you are constantly saying this is what we're focusing on. The tasks are something that everybody can learn and with practice get better and faster and more efficient. The EQ, miles, the body language, the tone of voice, the critical thinking, all that stuff, they're now in the top 10 skills that employers look for in staff across all industries. You know, it's your ability to self-manage your own stress, to work out co-worker conflict without, you know, having to go to the boss and say, I don't think so-so is doing this right, or I don't get on
with so-and-so. They're being mean to me.
People with high EQ in a workplace can resolve that stuff together because there is steps. There's heaps of steps. I highly recommend. I always recommend Daniel Goleman.
Yeah. Yep.
So
his
book is fantastic. He does great TED talks. His second book, which was probably not his second, I'm not 100% sure, but it was called Emotional Intelligence at Work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know it. So that's like particularly looking at the workplace and how EQ impacts teams and customer service and, you know, bottom lines at the end of the day.
Well, it's given that the allied health sector is having sizable challenges with recruitment and now sort of a bit of retention stuff is a little
dicey.
Flighty was what I was going to say. Literally people are disappearing to Europe for 2 months.
So the last time we had a chat, it was about where the hell are they?
Yeah. Now they're on planes to Europe, or they're moving jobs. Or
okay. Well, you found them. That's a bonus.
That's exactly right. I think that EQ into your values is really, really interesting. I'm going to enjoy thinking about that. I'll probably come back to you tomorrow with some 20 million questions on that. But it sets the scene for who is going to be a good match for your EQ environment and your brand.
It's so easy to have the conversation because there's no hierarchy in EQ. There is no the boss needs more EQ than the person, and I say, the cleaner, not meaning that they are down the line, they're just as important because the EQ of the office, how clean it is, what it smells like, the noise, has a major impact on a lot of people, particularly with sensory issues. So this is the emotional feeling that this space gives you as well. So, that's part of the stuff we look at when we talk to allied health is just run an eye over your workplace, and the first person to do it should be the person you hired last. And particularly if they've been there less than a month, because their eyes and ears and nose are all sort of
ready
to pick up what they like, don't like, or could question things. So, and we say, get curious with your staff, ask them what they like about their job. And an induction is the first and most important time, obviously, at interview. Yep. But if you've gone with your gut or whatever you're using to hire and resumes and reference checks, in your induction period is when you're really going to find out. That's when you're really going to find out. There is no hard and fast, recruitment strategy. You can do all the things, but it's your probation period that you're going to find out what's their EQ like.
Yeah. And you can also fly them into what the EQ of the organisation is that they've joined and what the language is and what the stories are and what's the narrative and what are the fables that they've, the folklore that they haven't got joined into yet.
Look, I was talking to an organisation just yesterday and they put into their values that they want their staff to think about their role as leaving a lasting legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that the staff initially thought, legacy is kind of like, ugh. And they said, no, we framed it in the sense that we want them to be so proud that when they leave the role, they leave behind a really valuable legacy. So that's one of their values, is they want their staff to think about their job as if someone else comes in and does it later on, they're going to be so thankful of the great work that this person did. So I thought, okay, that's a great spin to put on it. And that's one of their values, is we want our staff to leave a really positive legacy. So interesting ways everybody's trying something. But that induction is a really powerful time to start having deep EQ conversations.
Induction, we just happen to call it onboarding. Same.
Yeah.
Same. Yep, same, yep. same, 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 same. sometimes business owners think that it's all done and dusted in 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. Certainly with our members, we support them to really think about it a lot more long term, with a lot more structure and so on and so forth.
Structure is so important.
Yeah, and feed forward, as we call it, as well, all the way through it. What are your observations on how new team members are onboarded?
I would say there's a lot of passion about getting it right and a lot of confusion about what right looks like. So everyone is very clear it's an important space, but time, money, wait lists tend to override, you know, how much we can really spend time on this induction thing. So that's the reality. You know, we have to look at that. So getting a little bit creative. There's a link on our website if anyone wants to go, just to help with their initial conversations. We have a free resource on there called the WIN activity, W-I-N, and also service excellence conversations. So they're prompted questions with explainers on there to help really engage your team and get an understanding of what's your EQ like? This is what our business is aiming for. How do you feel about it? So you don't have to do the thinking. Just go and download these. They're just PDF forms. And it just helps you have these conversations, because understanding who's come to your team beyond the interview process.
Like, who is the human behind?
Yeah. And it's just, you know, we all put on our nice, you know, wonderful interview face, and we can tick all the boxes and write the KFC and do whatever we need to do to get in the foot in the door. We really want to know who these people are early, but more importantly, we want them to know who we want them to be and who we are, which comes back to your standards, doesn't it? Like, if you don't have standards, then you can't point to anything and say, this is what we expect. So standards in the interview process, standards in the induction onboarding, but then keep it going. Yeah, it's not like just a 2 week, you'll do 2 hours of this, then you'll do 1 hour of that, and then 3 hours of that. I think it's better to look at it from a point of view of professional development, and this is something that never ends. You know, it is at least quarterly, there's something going on to upskill your team or maintain the great skills that they've already got. That's the thing about EQ. It's not like a set and forget.
Gather around, dear listeners, for a moment of sheer audio delight. You may have heard, but we love to chat with Allied Health business owners. We get inspired hearing about your aspirations, the challenges you face, the roadblocks that get in your way, and business realities. So we invite you to book a free power call with a Naker Consulting business specialist, regardless of where you're at in business. Maybe you're feeling overwhelmed or overworked or overjoyed. We're here for you, and we'll meet you exactly where you are, judgment-free. It's okay to book a second or even a third call. We're always keen to hear all your news. Book a free power call with us today at naker.com.au/free-power-call. Let's get the convo ball rolling. Now it's time to get back to our regularly scheduled banter.
Running a business isn't just about setting up shop and becoming complacent. It's about showing up for ourselves and our clients with a commitment to continuous improvement. We have to be honest with ourselves about where we're at and where we're going. That means identifying strengths and weaknesses so we can improve. After all, if we're remaining stagnant, how can we scale and build the business and life of our dreams? That's where the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz comes in. We're not talking horoscopes and horoscopia. This questionnaire is the perfect starting point for you to begin identifying your strengths, needs, and blind spots as an Allied Health business owner. The process is simple. Answer the 14 questions and we'll send you a personalized report that includes actionable steps for you to start taking your business to the next level. Ready to take your business into your own hands? Take the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz today.
I was running a masterclass last year, the year before, actually it was 2 years ago, and it was on retention, and we were talking about the impact of onboarding, and I put out the question, when does your onboarding process commitment finish? And all the, 7 days, 21, everyone came through, 3 months, 6 months. And then someone put in, I've never forgotten, and I've been grateful ever since, is the day they leave.
Yeah. That is fabulous. And I totally agree with it. Look, I've just spent the last 3 months working with what we'll call a, let me just call it a call centre. It's not actually a call centre, but it's that kind of environment. So their turnover is high. Sorry, I just saw something click there. Their turnover is very, very high. It's just the nature of the call centre. So they're onboarding all the time. So they literally have a 4-week onboarding program before you can get on the phones.
Yeah, wow.
And quite honestly, it's a mess. Like, it's not engaging. It's not keeping people, you know, focused on what's happening and why it's important, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's just really interesting. I think we think about onboarding like this traditional thing, like it's write up a checklist and make sure they know all that and throw them into it.
Fix it all up later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then you wonder why people don't stay as long as you want, as you think they should or you want them to.
Yeah, it is a challenge. But I think you have to look at it. I mean, their onboarding is like 50 people every 6 weeks. So, wow. You know, that's not the scale that you're looking at for your business. You would hope that you're onboarding 1, 2, or 3, you know, every 6 months or something, whatever that is. But it doesn't matter how many there are. It's paying attention to that person and understanding what they need, what they want. And then, yeah, the onboarding never stops. Like, there's always something to learn, including if you're running the show.
Yeah.
Don't we know that?
my brain has just connected some dots, which it does on a good day. And it's what you said earlier about having customer service standards. And I think you need standards built into your onboarding protocols as well, onboarding totally. Systems. So
you
that
should
you
be
know,
hiring with those standards in mind. But if you don't have them, then you're relying on that common sense piece, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah. But also if you've gone to the effort of designing a pretty specky onboarding, you know, 3-month onboarding program, for want of a better word, you want to know that it's working and that it's totally. The people are doing what you've tasked them to do and that it's having the desired impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And that requires, you know, part of your onboarding is that you're seeking feedback from them all the time. And also you're giving feedback, and it's hard to give feedback if you're 3 months into somebody or 2 months in and you notice that they're actually not switching off their negative attitude from the car and it is infiltrating through the workplace. You want to be prepared. Well, how do I have that conversation?
Yeah.
And it's so much more effective when you point to standards. And actually one of our standards is that we have a lot of high level of self-awareness and we can self-regulate our behaviour. And this is what I'm noticing. So it's not coming from our person. It is the business standard.
Yep. And that makes it more consistent and achievable for everyone over longer periods of time.
Particularly if the owner of the business is not the person that's having those conversations, because your HR or your practice manager can leave. So you don't want those standards to be just built around that person's thoughts and ideas. They have to be what's the standards of the business, so that when people leave, the standards remain.
But when we think of these customer service standards, what do they actually look like and feel like? Where do they live and how do you use them? So many questions, Kate.
Yeah, and that's where you start. You start talking to your team. So if you kind of come at this podcast and you go, oh, we don't actually have any other than the fact that we talk about it and say, you know, we have to be really quick and return phone calls and we use their names. And, you know, a lot of people just throw a heap of things out as their idea of what customer service standards are. That's generally how it starts. And I think that's a great way to start. You get in a room, you give everybody a sticky notepad, and you say, write down what you think service excellence is in the eyes of our client. So what is going on? And then get them to put their thoughts up, stick them up around the room, categorize them, because you'll see some similarities. And if then there's an agreement, we look at it and go, are we aiming for good or are we aiming for excellent? Can we bump that thing up? So if everybody says, well, we should smile at somebody as soon as they walk in, we go, well, how do we measure that? That's really hard. Like, is someone going to stand there and video everyone? And it's like, oh.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, why not? Yeah. It's like, well, no, maybe we should make it that within 3 to 5 seconds of people entering the building, they have an interaction with somebody. There's some sort of interaction. And then it becomes a lot more interactive. And then you can get feedback and you say to your staff after a week, okay, so when you had your 3 to 5 second interaction, what did you get back? Like, what did the client say? So you can actually follow that up. You can go, okay. And eventually it becomes a habit and you move away from common sense and you just keep going, this is our standard. And they're works in progress. Like, they should never be like, this is it. This is what we do. It's like, no, what your customers and clients want can change. So it's not a... I call it an evolution piece. I call it a team piece. It shouldn't be the manager and the practice manager sitting together going, rightio, what are the customer service standards? Because you're missing a huge opportunity to get your staff involved in it and to get their ownership. Because if they say that's what it is, you've got a much stronger commitment to it and also a much calmer conversation if they don't meet it. It's like, well, actually, this is what you suggested as a team. Why aren't we meeting it? What are we missing? So you can have your traditional things. We answer the phone within 4 rings. We have a 3 to 5 second interaction with a client when they walk in. We have a presentation standard of uniforms. We have, you know, all of these, what we call the traditional customer service standards. But, you know, there's also things around, well, we think that the team needs to understand human behaviour better. And one of our standards is that everybody has a maybe they do a personality profile, maybe they do some sort of PD around the piece that helps us improve our understanding of human behaviour. Maybe we do a communication session about body language. So there's lots of boxes you can tick that stick on the development wheel that will help you reach that standard.
Yeah. I think people often just forget how good the traditional stuff, that's not the right word, but the traditional values of customer service are. And I think things that are really easily forgotten and that a couple of bad days can kind of, you know, drag everybody down, or some news about the NDIS and morale plummets, or there's been a really difficult customer that has just included 3 or 4 team members, and things can kind of dip and sometimes stay a little lower than they should for a little longer than they should as well.
And I think too with your allied health businesses, Kathy, it's a very, from the ones that I've been in, it's a very open environment. So your clients can see and feel it. Like, it's not like, you walk in and you just see one person. There's people walking through, walking past. They can hear phone calls sometimes. So it infiltrates, doesn't it, across the organisation pretty quickly.
Yeah. I think the other thing that infiltrates as such is in the absence of documented, trained, measured standards, people fabricate and just make up their own stuff, and common sense is not always common, and some of it will be okay, and other times it is just really, really patchy, and that has a remarkable and very quick impact on brand and reputation in the market.
Yeah, it's I think what the challenge is for business owners is they look at it, I don't know about you, but starting my business, I was always told you have to have a business plan, right? And it just made me feel sick. Every time somebody said to me, you needed this 12-page, you know, all these things that you need to do, and I didn't know how to do it, so I never did it. And then at some point, smart people like you did things like, you know, your 1-page business plan and make things easier.
Yeah.
They will grow bigger later, but start with the absolute basics. And that's what we say about your customer service standards. Start where you feel is this is the absolute basics. No more than 5 to 8, I would recommend. You don't want a whole tree of customer service standards, but they may grow as you grow as well. So get your 5 to 8, get the team around with post-it notes. Talk about it from the point of view of the client, though. Don't talk about it from what do you think is excellent service. Ask them to what do they think our clients think is excellent service. And they'll have the knowledge and they will feel then, okay, now we can put some, okay, we think our clients think excellent service is, you know, that we come in, that we get the appointment time that we want, that, you know, we get a little bit of a cup of tea or something, whatever it is, all these little things. And the team just goes, yeah, this would be great. And then you turn that into a standard and you go, well, this is our standard. And you won't always reach it, just like every standard. You know, if you want a budgeting standard, you don't always meet it, but you go for gold as much as you can. So work with the team. Work with the team. They've got the information. You've got the power as the business owner or the practice manager. Yeah. to mold it or to lead it where you want. But if you just throw standards out there and say this is it, you've missed the buy-in opportunity. Yeah.
Kate, I happen to know what you think about the notion of treating people how you want to be treated.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just go put the kettle on and come back.
Yeah.
What do you reckon about that?
Yeah. It limits you to being okay at service sometimes.
For people like you.
Yeah. If I act like that, then every day I meet Kate Schreck, she's going to be thrilled.
And that takes a lot.
It takes a lot. Kate Schreck is going to absolutely delight Kate Schreck.
Mm.
So you have to take that out of your mind and go, every client will have a different expectation. Your job is to be the detective and work out what's their customer service standard. What is this person's standard of excellence? And that's what I love about it, because every time you meet someone, they're going to have a different idea of what's excellent. It's about getting your staff to really buy into that. It's like, it's not your standard of excellence that's going to give us a great reputation. It's us being able to be a detective and work out what's that one client's standard of excellence. Because some of them want you to sit and talk to them for half an hour, and some of them just give me the information and let me go. And both of them then will walk away saying best service ever.
Yeah. And it's been different. And it's about the service they want, not what you think you would want if you were them.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not cookie cutter. It's not one size fits all, but excellent service is not treating people how you want to be treated. It's treating people how they want to be treated.
Yeah.
And that's the detective hat. Yeah. It's not easy, but it's so fun and rewarding. And particularly when you have clients that are repeat, like you have your allied health have people coming back. And when you nail what it is that person thinks is excellent, it's so much easier every time you see it. Yeah.
So we spoke earlier about how everybody is coming through the COVID hangover in their own sort of special way, and that there is whatever there is in sitting with business owners and with allied health professionals and customer service staff. It's also sitting with clients, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How can you kind of get us thinking about how to be providing, top shelf customer service to emotional clients or tired clients or overwhelmed clients?
Yeah, it seems to have eased up a little bit. The first round of calls we had about 9 months ago was very much about, Kate, the staff are just exhausted with negativity, with, burnout of not just themselves, of the clients. We do have a training process that we have that can help them, but it's based and built around the idea of emotional intelligence as well. So it's sort of, we look at it in three stages. There's understanding what drives people to behave that way. So we look at just what's going on in their world, the empathy piece. But then we put in a four-step process that is about how can I communicate with that person in that moment that will help them move through their emotions and switch on their rational brain. Because the old rational brain's having a sleep when you're angry, fatigued, burnt out and all of that. Mm-hmm. So getting your staff to recognise this person is not taking this out on you personally, because if you weren't there that day at work, they would have just been exhausted, frustrated or angry with the other staff member. So once we get rid of the, it's personal, they're attacking me, then we can work on, you're there to help them. You can actually take them through this process that is going to help them and take them to a place where sometimes, and this happens quite a bit, they apologise for their poor behaviour. But no one's apologising in the early stages. So, it's a process that I actually developed when I left after 17 years in banking. happily retrenched, and I thought, gee, I'm going to go find a job where there's no nasty customers. I literally went through Seek and all of those platforms to try and find a new job. With no one to yell at me and no one to, it was stupid, but I thought maybe, just maybe. And there isn't. And I thought, well, that's me trying to change the world. I can't change anybody else, so I better give myself some skills to deal with difficult people. And that's when I developed that four-step process. So it helps me immeasurably. And then you have to look at the third part. So we have the before, we have the during, and then the after. Because often even it could be after one difficult person, but sometimes it's like 3 months of difficult people before you start to really feel it. Because you kind of go, oh, yeah, I handled that one today. And, oh, yeah, there was another bad one tomorrow. But then it's like 3, 6 months and sometimes 5 years down the track, you go, I'm just sick of this. Like people are rude. I've had enough of this. So we look at the impact of those little drops of negativity that pop into your bucket every day when something doesn't go right. And we've just, we work through it, but it comes from empathy. You know, everybody's having a hard time. It's just whether or not they're showing you. And it's one of the ways that we frame it is that a complaint is actually a compliment. It might be wrapped in barbed wire, but that person wouldn't be complaining to you if they didn't think you could help them. And that's essentially what frontline customer service is. You are helping people. Mm. Yeah.
Just because you've got a degree or you've been a frontliner for 20 years doesn't mean that you know it all or that you can even do it all day in, day out.
And no, unfortunately, that's the space we find where complacency has actually snuck in.
Yeah, yeah, and just bad habits and bad mindset around it. And so the training you do is so critical because it's so nuanced and so practical. Yeah. And Kate, this is the moment where you talk about your book.
Oh.
And your training.
Do you want to go get another copy, do you?
I don't even have a copy within reach. I'm not even in the same state as my book right now.
Yeah, well, all of this passion, and people tell me that it sort of, this passion is a bit sort of dripping off me, so to speak. I don't know really when or it actually happened, but I just became super passionate about making sure that customers got great service no matter what business they went to. And then I did a program that taught me how to write a book, which is where I met you.
Oh, yeah.
And I wrote a book, and it's called The A to Z of Service Excellence. And it literally is, it's so nice. Someone the other week reached out to me and said, Kate, I've got my blue Bible in my top drawer. I know. And I reached for it the other day because I had a difficult customer, and I said, oh, tell me about it. Like, tell me what the book did. So she said, well, it's just great because she said, you told me don't read the whole book. You just go to the last page, and every chapter from A through to Z is a topic to do with, you know, being a frontline customer service person. So she said, I went to H for handling complaints. And she said, it just really helped me get perspective. And it really reminded me of the importance of the four steps. And, yeah, she said, so we call it the blue Bible in the workplace now.
It's stood the test of time, hasn't it?
It has. I've actually thought, oh, gosh, I should maybe go through and update it. And then I thought, no, actually, that's the whole point of it. Like, it's not time bound. It is humans at work dealing with humans at work. So just with the, you know, the flavour of customer service. But it really began because so many times I go into supermarkets, I go into medical centres, I'd go anywhere, or I'd meet someone socially and I'd say, oh, what do you do? And they'd say, I'm Justa.
Oh, Justa. Good old Justa.
Yeah, and it was always like, oh, I'm just a receptionist, I'm just admin. I like
a weasel word.
Oh, it just made me feel so angry because it's telling me that that business hasn't made that person feel like there's something going on here. Why is there a disconnect between how the business makes their frontline staff feel? Why are they saying I'm just up? And it just, created the book really. So I wrote it for the frontline staff. I wrote it for those people, not their managers. And, yeah, it's now stocked in school libraries, which makes me very excited.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's very cool.
Well, not all school libraries, but the libraries, whenever we work in school, the same, we want a copy here because we think it's great for our students, you know, our year 10, 11s and 12s, to get an idea what's the workplace landscape like, what's the employers looking for. And they're still looking for what they looked for when I started work at 15, the same stuff. You know, they want people to be polite, friendly, handle complaints, all of that stuff. So there's the book.
Oh. And in 2018, with a rush of blood to the head, you started a new division in your business. And this is such
great
a perfect
segue.
Right.
With 2019, we launched.
2019.
Yeah,
just,
It started off October 2019, just before some sort of fluey thing started to do the rounds.
Oh, I thought it was 2018. You had a year run up. So perfect segue, just for schools is your kind of other division. What's that one about?
Well, we'd been working in schools under the light bulb banner anyway. So it just became really clear that schools were a very underserviced area for their non-teaching staff. So the teachers get a lot of PD, they have to do it to keep their credentials, all of that. But the ES, or the education support staff, they're missing out. And now I had no idea. There is a huge percentage of employees in a school that aren't teachers and who are still having to deal with difficult people. Teamwork's a big issue. They have multiple sites as well. So, you know, there's three or four campuses in large schools. They're not catching up. They don't have time, all the general stuff. So, yeah, we now have a business called Just for Schools. And, again, I have a group of trainers. A couple of them are ex-teachers. And we design and deliver training that sits in the non-teaching staff space. Same topics, exactly the same topics, but we really know what the schools, how they work, how they run, what their challenges are. So, yeah, we launched that in 2019.
Oh, my gosh.
And very quickly went, oh, great. But they actually used our online services the most over COVID because all their non-teaching staff were still employed. Mm-hmm. So unlike the teachers who were scrabbling to do lesson plans and do their teaching online, we had administrators, librarians, maintenance staff also needing to do something. So we did a lot of their PD online. Yeah, and we launched a brand new website only 3 months ago. And it is humming along and we are loving it.
Wow, that's good. It's good. And it's exactly where our conversation started, in that the principles of customer service are agnostic. They apply anywhere to allied health, to professional services, to utility companies, to schools as well.
It's
pretty mind-blowing to think about the role of our of those frontline school staff during COVID. Could you just imagine the nature of the phone calls and challenges and emails? I'm literally rubbing my head with disbelief.
I know what allied health handled.
Yes.
But I really know what schools, I mean, we all saw it was on the news. So we all had a bit of a, you know, it was socially, you know, it was across the landscape that, oh, the poor teachers. I was really having empathy for the poor support staff because they were the ones that we're getting the calls from the parents, you know, well, this link doesn't work. Well, that does, like all the administrators, all the, it blew my mind just how much they dealt with, coped with. And unfortunately now what we find, which has created our newest full-day session for non-teaching staff in schools, there's been a lot of disruptive students coming back to school. So they are dealing with a lot of angry kids. They're dealing with a lot of disconnected kids. They're dealing with a lot of kids who are just not in the learning zone. And it's not just the teachers that are interacting with them. It's integration aides. It's, you know, it's all the support
classroom
stuff.
Support workers.
So now we've got a one-day session run by two of our trainers who are ex-teachers, called Supporting Students with Challenging Behaviours. So it's as much about how do you help your administrators, your finance people, your librarians handle the impact of that. So we don't go into the deep down, you know, what you do with a student so much as how you work through that yourself and how as a team it's really important that you do the right things, say the right things, but also have the space to kind of go, this is tough.
Yeah, and ask for some help.
So that's Just for Schools. Yeah, it's going really well.
Yay. So we've got a couple of minutes left. Kate, what would you like listeners to be thinking and maybe even doing about customer service in their organisations?
I think, honestly, I go very much back to having the conversations with your existing staff. Go and download those freebies off our website, lightbulbtraining.com.au. Check them out. It just makes it easier on you as the practice manager or the owner, director, whichever position is having these conversations. You will find that things will start to roll from there. So there's about 12 or 13 different questions that you can ask. You can do it one-on-one, you can do it as a team, you can do it by email, like whatever works for your team. But if you haven't got standards, that's where you start. Start thinking about it. You can mind map it yourself with your, you know, your director or your practice manager, but let your team also mind map it and then come together and create your 5 to 8. 5 to 8 is just, it's too many to remember if you have a, you know, a wall full of standards, you know. Three is not enough. 3 to me, it's just going to be like, be polite, be professional. It's not specific enough. Yeah. So that would be my number one thing. And then start talking about emotional intelligence. You know, there's so much that we can Google on it. Start making that something that's maybe even 10 minutes on your meeting agendas. What is EQ? Start there. Like, what is it? Why does it matter? Grab a copy of my book, Chapter E is Emotional Intelligence. So there's stats and facts and figures in there. So if you want to use that, and every chapter has an action at the end of it. So it's pretty much, you know, pick it up and run with it sort of stuff. But they're the two things, you know, have the conversations and make emotional intelligence one of your values. Pop it in there somewhere and get the conversation started. And it never stops. Yeah.
Thank you, Kate. Awesome as always.
Oh, thanks.
And we will most definitely get you back in the future to see what you've been up to next. It's been a while, Crocodile, so good for a bit of a catch-up here.
Yeah, look, I'll probably start another new business and then that will create the next flu pandemic or something.
It was all your fault, was it?
Yeah, it was. I hit go on a new business and then, yeah, everything stopped. So, you know, I'm powerful, but I don't think I'm that powerful.
We love it. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naker.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.